Okay. It's a workroom. That's what it's going to have to be. Please state your name.
My name? Okay, so my name is Olavo.
That sounds sexy.
Does it not?
Olavo. Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
What's your name?
You can talk. Please talk.
She's like, wait, is this official? Yes, it's very official.
This is actually the official. Yeah. It's the official podcast.
Yes.
I'm Amandla Awetu.
Amandla.
That sounds beautiful.
Awetu.
Yeah.
Oh.
How are the people?
Okay, so where are we, guys? Where are we?
So we're at my house in Rotterdam, the Netherlands.
Uh-huh.
And we've just had soup and bread and hummus and my couch, a really big couch. It's really nice.
Delicious.
This is so nice. And we are drinking a meal tea.
True.
This is, oh my goodness. So I'm moving in. And I need, I need you to put me on the lease, is what I'm saying. My name is Denise.
Welcome.
Just hook it up. Okay. So just say the word.
I mean, I'm not even kidding about that. Like, I really want to live with people. Uh-huh. So sick and tired of living on my own.
Uh-huh.
Like, I grew up in a big family of, like, 8. I had so many cousins and aunts were coming in and out of the door. I didn't even know whether we were related or not. So, like, 8, like, plus a whole bunch of people. And I'm 33 years old out, and I realize if this is what I'm supposed... Like, for some reason, like, I look back and I was like, I grew up, I went to Burundi, like, after, like, almost 12 years of not being back home. I went back and I saw all these families still living together, all of them and stuff like that, and thought, like, oh my God, these people, why did they... And now I'm looking back and I'm like, they got it right. Yeah, they figured out something really nice.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyway, so you could definitely move. Bring your kids.
Okay,
bring
so how about we start like this dope queer collective?
Oh yeah,
in the dome.
Yes.
Are you? Oh, you're like just smiling. Like your whole face is like yes.
That's what we're doing already, right? Yeah. That's what we're doing.
I really hope.
But so. I mean, like a physical space, and like we like really live there, and it's gonna be okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool. I'm gonna need a timeshare.
Yeah, exactly. If your listeners, I sort of have like I don't know money.
Yes.
Let's
go fund
this.
I've been talking to a lot of my friends, queer collectives and living together and everything, and you always have the problem of like where, how are we gonna pay for this? Like who's gonna put up the guarantee for the house?
We should just squat something.
Yeah, squat something. But it's illegal now in the Netherlands.
Okay, but we black, so they
exactly.
We just gonna be dead, and then who does that help? Who does that help? Yeah. All right, it's just one more
and
for the
know
man.
The police doesn't like us right now. You're one of them.
So let's get to the story. Let's get into it.
Okay.
Let's get into this.
Let's get to this.
What's going on in Rotterdam right now?
It's a mess.
You're from Burundi.
I'm originally from Burundi, yes.
Okay.
I came here when I was 9 years old.
Uh-huh.
And, since my 9th until now, I've lived in about 10 different countries or something. But most of the time since then, I've basically lived in another.
Okay. And
but I've traveled around and lived in other countries.
Uh huh. And so you're queer, you're here.
Yes. Yes, I am a non-binary trans femme person who is, you know, kinky and pervy and, you know, all the good stuff. I'm very black about it all.
And very black. Oh, that's very black.
Just very black.
And so, like, how... Is there tension of that here? Just like let's start within the queer scene.
I think I want to make a differentiation between the queer scene and the gay scene. So like I think the LGBTIA scene, well, LGBT scene in the Netherlands is predominantly white, and is, you know, sort of able body centric, very sort of orientated towards sort of hugging or nearing towards homonormativity. It is racist, very racist. Like my first experiences at gay bars in the Netherlands included being sort of chattel, you know, like sort of, well, like mostly like, you know, like how you treat a potential, you know, how do you call, in Dutch they call it dickhang. So this sort of the bull that will like sire a bunch of new, you know, like you're treated like that. I've had in gay bars where people would literally grab you by the crotch to evaluate whether or not they could handle it or whether it was worth their time. You know, the BBC, you know, Chase. You know, and that's like really normal in the Netherlands, and that's considered a compliment. Like every other conversation I have on Grindr, all about the BBC, and and it's extremely racist community, and you see this in the lesbian community, in the gay community, in the trans community, like everything about, you know, the difficulties that I have around sort of the trans community. A lot of it is sort of into these beauty standards that are very Eurocentric. You know, like I've had people tell me like, tell me about how I should, like, you know, feminize my face if I want all around surgery, but then talk about how I should feminize it, like, and I'm listening, I'm like, but you're trying to look like a white woman, you know, like long hair and and so there's it's full of that in Rotterdam, in the Netherlands, and also you see terms of poverty amongst the LGBT community in the Netherlands is mostly the black one, the people of color who have problems with finding jobs, keeping jobs. When you look at how you're treated by Social Security in the Netherlands and Rotterdam, it's, you know, I've met so many people who are of color and who are queer who need food bank to survive. And, you know, while it is less so if you're white, you know? So all of that. That's how shit rolls, how shit goes down in Holland for people of color who are queer. And violence as well. And just a lot of stuff.
And the shame also goes along with, like, having to go to the food bank or, I mean, like, at churches, they, I mean, the church that I was in, I used to be, like, the food bank, like, every Sunday you could pick up food and, you know, and, like, people would line up. Because it's easier than having to actually go to the food bank and then that process.
And it is just also, I think, what is also really interesting about the that all of this is extremely, like, it's a race. Like, none of it, none of it is happening according to sort of the standard story. People, what the Dutch are saying about themselves, to themselves about themselves, is that, you know, if you're queer, you're, like, really happy here.
Yeah.
Like, you have, you know, like, you have the best life you can think of. But it's definitely not your best black life. Also, you're made to choose also in the gay community in the Netherlands. Like,
how are you made?
Like, you're either queer or you're black. You're either queer or you're Muslim. You're either, it's not, it's all of these sort of this idea that you're told that you have to choose between assimilating and sort of be loyal to this Dutch ideals, which are whiteness, which are superiority and all that. Or if you want to keep having sort of ties to your community where you come from and everything, you can't have it. You have to choose. So you have to come out, for example, and your friends don't, you know, accept that, then you need to, like, you know, get rid of them and love you anyways. And, you know, there's a lot of that language of, you know, you can't possibly be queer and be Muslim at the same time. That can't be, you know. You can't be queer and say, well, I'm very proud of African roots, for example. All of that is just not possible. Like, I heard so many times people tell me, like, aren't you great you can live here? Because in Burundi, they would do this and that to you. I'm like, bitch, you don't even know what they would do to me.
So let's talk about living here. What's it like living here? What's it like getting a job, walking down the street in your body in Rotterdam? You just sigh.
I sigh because it's a complicated question. Yeah. It's a full one as well. Because I think a lot of that goes to sort of like in everyday life, it's like really, I have to really think about what I wear and, you know, when I wear it and how. There are days where I call it my cis drag, where where I walk around with hoodies because I just don't want to be seen. I want to be, you know, and the threat of violence. Like, I'm a pretty big person. Like, I'm big and I'm very black, and that protects me in a way, you know, so I can wear, like, sort of a lot of makeup or, like, be having my, you know, my head wraps and dresses and go out, and people will sort of look at me and be like, I'm not gonna mess with that bitch. She looks like, no, he looks like he means business, right? Yeah. So they will do that. But at the same time, I know, I still have this sort of moments very vulnerable that I don't even, even that sense of protection from my body being big and black doesn't, it's not enough. So how do I testify to that? I feel like testifying to that requires distance, and I don't have it. I feel like I'm in the middle of it, and and I have a difficulty assessing whether my sense of security is and safety is sort of legit. I don't know how to analyze it, because I think for example, if I was more petite, what I wear on the street, how can I speak to that experience? If I was
but we're just talking about your experience.
My experience is that on good days I feel like I can handle the world. I feel like I'm safe in this. I bike everywhere. I don't use public transportation though, because that's not safe.
People come at you.
Yeah, they will speak to you. Young people, mostly white young people, males. You know, the white girls sort of joking around and in the back of you, and I've had people take pictures of me like in the metros.
Wow.
And you know, like, oh my god, look at that, you know. And well, I'm looking pretty fine. And I know that I've had talks with people from municipalities sort of who decide on whether you get money or not for Social Security, tell me that if that I can never get a job, why don't I sort of man up? Or also because my situation, I'm quite poor, so I can't buy, because that will allow me to pass. I can't buy pretty dresses. Like, everything I own, it doesn't always fit, doesn't always match, you know. There's no, I don't have money for, like, you know, I don't know, like, really nice wigs, pass all the way, all that stuff. So, you know, it's not, I know, like, I studied law. I have a master in corporate law. Like, I know I will never, at this point in my life, I would have to go back into the closet to have any chance of working at my level.
Okay.
You know, when I was a lawyer, like when I worked as a lawyer, like I wore suits every day and stuff like that. If I tried to go to the same law now to get a job, they would just laugh me out of there. Just, daddy, don't even. That's the reality in the Netherlands. Yeah.
So, do you think that reality is like, how is that processed by the Black queer community here? Like, what's the support system look like? Because you guys have each other, right?
Yeah.
So I met Amandla at the Black Feminist Conference, and then Amandla brought me to you and talked about the situation that happened at We Reclaim Our Pride. So that seems pretty special. I mean, like, is that something that has been formed in any way?
It's like extremely in the beginning stages, I would say, like, being to create a community. This was an initiative that I took together with two other queer people.
Explain the initiative.
Gender non-conforming. Huh?
Explain the initiative.
Okay, so the initiative is like, it's initiative, basically, of... I had the idea of bringing together different organizations, quite radical organizations, in a coalition to like together form a coalition that would intervene in political demonstrations or events that have been depolitized. And we call ourselves Anti-Capitalist Decolonial Sectional Solidarity Bloc.
That just flows off. You got that.
Amandla is the only one that actually knows.
Whatever.
I always go like the intersectional block.
I need you to say that again, Amandla. Say it.
Anti-capitalist decolonial intersectional solidarity Bloc. Yeah. Okay. So that's the wider the first time we did this was during the anti-racism.
Wasn't that Women's March?
Yeah.
The white women's march?
Yeah.
You put on top of the Women's March?
No. Like, that's when I saw, you know, that's when the idea was like...
Okay.
Coming up.
Actually, we wanted to do something like that then, but then that didn't really happen. So then at the Women's March, I saw a queer block, and there was also another block. So I first joined the other block, and then I ended up in a queer block, and I was like, no, these are my people. We could do something together. And so I met up with organizers. I like saw who organized that event, the queer block, and I talked to, you know, some other people, and together we formed this idea to like, but it was just gonna be for like in the demos.
Yeah.
So the second time we did was the People's Climate March.
Yeah, that was fun. Also, okay. The White People's Climate March.
Exactly. Very much. And we brought in climate justice.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And all of these issues, you know, like we brought in like how does. Not just looking at Europe or through a gaze at climate change, but
yeah.
Like how does it affect the rest of the world?
We dropped the art. We dropped ecological racism, and
yeah.
People in the crowd, I could see them look at me, go like, "Why you go and ruin our little picnic?" Yeah, right.
Yeah. This is like all these white people look at me like, "What?"
That's something. Yeah. About
and I think we've been blacklisting anything a Greenpeace ever does again.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
That's something. That's something that That's very Dutch, you know? Everything has to be gezellig, which means
what's
fun.
Oh.
Yeah. Gezellig, just cozy
like,
and fun.
Cozy and fun. Like,
angenehm.
Yeah. And like, yeah, I mean, you know, like, talking about racism,
mm-hmm.
but happy, you know, mm-hmm. to be talking about racism. Why you have to be serious?
Right,
about,
right.
Like, why you have to be, like,
right,
the fuck?
Right.
This is
comfortable with
exactly
it.
Just as long as you make them comfortable.
But then you came out like because Pride was coming up, the Amsterdam Canal Pride was
yeah
coming
that
up.
Was all that was so when we're thinking about what was in it. So we had another meeting
mm-hmm.
with the coalition, and for some reason or other, just the queer people showed up to this meeting by chat, but just and then I'm not sure if they like all the way have come out, so I'm done. But they were like, oh, so like in a couple of months, the Canal Pride is happening, and we were all on board doing something. So we formed a working group, and we prepared the Canal Pride in Amsterdam and called it We Reclaim Our Pride.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a Facebook event,
mm-hmm.
which was like the event text was like an open letter, and we had like different people and organizations sign it
mm-hmm.
and say in saying that they the message
mm-hmm.
of the open letter. And
the focus was really like sort of the commercialization of the Amsterdam Canal Pride,
mm-hmm.
The pinkwashing for companies,
exactly.
Also for very oppressive, like sort of police also had a boat, the military had a boat,
oh.
The, yeah, banks,
Uber had a boat, sexist Uber had
yeah.
a boat,
oh, a bank that funded Dakota
Access Pipeline,
yeah.
Exactly.
They get a boat, you know,
yeah.
And they get to be all like, oh, we're doing really well in terms of queer.
Yeah.
By paying a lot of money to this sort of the Amsterdam Pride
to
organization
participate.
To participate. But
yeah.
So I think one of the things that we really wanted to bring was sort of talk about intersectionality and solidarity.
Yeah.
And as queer people, I really wanted to reflect how deeply rooted we are in different communities that are marginalized. So aside from the fact that we are queer, but also we are also,
mm-hmm.
you know, victims of ethnic what they call it, racial profiling.
Mm-hmm.
Ethnic profiling in the Netherlands.
Yeah, in the Netherlands.
Because
ethnic
they just don't like to call it racist.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're victims of Islamophobia, you know, because we're Muslims in our community. Victims of ableism, you know, and like how, and capitalism and all this, just sort of very intersectional, a political, politicizing message
yeah.
of the Amsterdam Canal kind of Pride. So we all, because the Pride, you couldn't join because you have to have a lot of money to get a boat.
20,000 euros.
Yeah, 20,000 euros to get a boat.
Okay.
So, and get these organizations, like, sort of little bars and gay clubs and everything that they used to, like, in back in the ages, used to participate
and
in the Canal Pride.
Even.
They can't afford to anymore.
Yeah.
So that's how.
Yeah, it's for
messy.
Certain organizations very difficult to, like, get a boat.
Yeah.
To even participate. Yeah, so that's, and it's also like not pride for some of us with liberation for all of us.
Yeah.
And not just here in the Netherlands because like ING has a diversity policy.
Yeah.
And that's not liberation.
So we brought it and it was a very, you know, very beautiful, like we had, I think more than 100 people showed up actually.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, a bunch of people showed up.
Yeah, mostly young people
out.
Of color as well,
yeah.
different backgrounds, we had people from Africa, we had people from, you know, and that was a message that people really appealed, like they were, oh yes, we get an opportunity
yeah.
to talk about how refugees are treated in this country,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, trust me.
horrible.
That's an whole other podcast session. The Netherlands are literally one of the example countries for other countries in Europe in terms of how badly you can treat your refugees. Mm-hmm. That's the Netherlands. Like, people mm-hmm. are trying to, like they're copying what the Dutch are doing. That's mm-hmm. how bad they are, anyways. And it was a really beautiful event.
A lot of people was also their first time demo. joining a demo. Yeah.
I had a lot of people come to me and say, like, thank you guys so much, because even people who had been to the Pride, like, this is an actual real, the first time I've been to a real Pride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that was really empowering. So from there, we thought, rather than a Pride walk, and that was a month later, which was a couple of weeks ago. And we decided, like, well, we're going to bring it as well in Rotterdam. But we also knew that the Rotterdam sort of Pride Walk is different, because the Pride Walk, you walk in Rotterdam. Mm-hmm. Well, in Amsterdam, you have to have a boat and have a lot of money mm-hmm. to be on the boat. Right. So we had occupied a bridge at Canal Pride. Uh-huh. But for the Rotterdam Pride, it was like, we're going to walk along.
Uh-huh.
We're going to be loud. Mm-hmm. We're going to be political. And mm-hmm. we're just going to mess up. We're just going to let the city know that these queers aren't here. We're not just sort of... So, like, posters, like, you know, you can't just pinkwash yourself with the mm-hmm. queer rights or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But we're political people. We're, like, our lives are political. But then we found out quite quickly that a extreme right group in Rotterdam had decided that they were joining the Pride Walk. And they were doing so, saying, basically going, like, we call themselves the Dutch Gay Servatives. And
so gay servitive is like a play on conservative.
Yeah, it's a play on conservative.
Gay servitive.
Yeah.
So they also very corny.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Very corny.
Oh my wow. God, Shane, that's just so... Yeah, very corny. And one of the founder of the Dutch Gay Servatives is gay. And he is the head of a very fascist... political party that is basically at the moment.
Mm.
So they hold majority position in the municipal council. They're very anti-Islam. They're mm-hmm. anti-poor people. Mm-hmm. But they do sort of...
So it's this idea of, like, I'm gay, so all my fascism works. Because, you know, at least, you know, hey.
He's been to say things like, I'm gay, but I'm not a sissy.
Okay.
He's been known to say things like, gender-neutral toilets are just sort of, like, you know, like, useless. Who knows? So he's also transphobic. Mm-hmm.
Their slogan is, pepper spray than... gender neutral WC,
so better spray than
gender neutral toilet.
Yeah.
I tell you, my Dutch kicks in when it's insults. I'm like, I know what you said. I know what you said.
Yeah.
So
I
better.
Mean, he's sort of a proponent of violence towards, like, he advocates violence towards people who are basically gay bashing, apparently, but not in the, like, you know, the gays bash back. No, in the, like, let's target Moroccan and Turkish youth. Let's take them off. You know, let's sort of deprive them of their national rights, their passports away, things like that. This is just total fascist shit. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he announced he was going to join the Pride because he's all about the safety of gay people, and which he construes as just basically white, Christian or atheist and male.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's also been known to say things like, oh, gay guys are these days are just as bad as women. Yeah, so...
Mm-hmm.
I know. I see y'all holding your heart, saying, I'm not gonna give you that.
So he like a Dutch Milo.
Well, yeah, he is, and he's a big fan of Trump. And he,
what's his name?
His name is Leonard.
Mm-hmm.
Leonard something.
Funny
Leonard
Mill.
Van Mill. Yeah.
Leonard Van Mill.
Okay. Yeah. So what happens? You get
so
to
So we were like, what?
Okay.
You gonna do what?
Mm-hmm.
And we notified the Rotterdam Pride organization and went, like, you realize that this sort of right fascist, like, who loves violence, who hates on trans people, who hates on women, like, wants to join the Pride. What you gonna do?
Mm-hmm.
What you gonna do about that? What are you gonna... And they went, like, oh, well, aren't y'all political as well?
Oh, so they both side you?
All sides matter, yes.
they were like, both sides.
And we're like, what, excuse us? And then they were like, well, we'll talk to him. Well, we get to the Pride Walk.
Mm.
First of all, it started off the day with getting called by the police and being sort of, like, harassed, the details of that. But we get to the Pride Walk, and the Rada Pride organization, the head of the chairperson, she's standing there and basically spends 5 minutes explaining to the crowd how she entered and how, you know, after consideration, she thinks he's a really nice guy and he means well, he does care about the safety of gay people. And we were standing there and we're like, are you just spending 5 whole minutes normalizing and legitimizing his hatred?
Well, they are facing the podium, so facing her,
yeah,
with an extremely fascist flag,
yeah,
a nationalist flag, Dutch flag, with some kind of tool like a breaking iron or something, yeah, on it. Like, it's so unreal.
It is unreal. And the thing is that, like, we were there as well, very, very political, and then this she's actually of color. Mm-hmm. And she's bisexual, and she basically goes like, I hope y'all respect them.
Yeah.
What the hell's going on? Like, at a pride, no less, right? Mm-hmm. So
we were practicing our chant.
So we're all full-on chant mode. Yeah, like, yeah. You know, we're going like, Black Lives Matter. We're here, we're queer refugees are welcome here.
No,
we're, like,
cis, anti- no trans. No money. Human is illegal.
No human is illegal.
Yeah, no cis, no trans, no human is illegal.
So we went, you know, anti-capitalism, power to the people. Like,
no,
we went,
pride in fascism.
No pride in fascism.
No pride, you know, in racism.
Racial profiling is racism, you know.
Right.
No, we did that one after the police harassed us. Oh, yeah. Harassing us. That's,
but the first thing that happened, these guys run to the front, which the front was reserved for or the pink elders. We call them, everything is, that's queer, they call it pink something. Mm-hmm. So they call them the Rosa Elder, the pink elders. Mm. So they get to go up front, but these guys would decide, like, we're going to go before them.
Before the elders.
Yeah, because we had, the Rotterdam Pride Walk was sort of the brainchild of a very grassroots queer organization here in Rotterdam, mm-hmm, called the Hangout No Teen. And one of the people who came up with the Pride Walk, one of the things that we're clear on is, like, the Pride Walk needs to be set, the pace needs to be set by the elders. Mm-hmm. We cannot have a situation where we celebrate, you know, our lives and we don't talk about diversity in the city and so on, but we don't actually, we have the elders running behind us, right?
Yeah.
And so that was from the get-go something that was part of how we had designed the Pride Walk. The Pride Walk at this point is no longer being organized by the Hangout No Teen, where I volunteer, but it has been taken over by bigger KPN, this big company, telecom communications company in the Netherlands. Mm. I mean, what does it have to do with queerness? But anyway, so they're walking up front and they run before the elder.
Who runs? What is the name of them? The gay servatives.
It's more
now,
like the gay KK.
We call them the gay KK. Yeah, the perfect name for them.
I refuse to call them gay servants. They're the gay KK, straight up.
Yeah.
But and so they run to the front.
They run to the front.
Of the queer elders, okay. Yeah,
because that was even before, like, in the beginning, there was some confusion. We hadn't even seen the queer elders. And so we were standing in front. It was going to start underneath the banner, behind the brass band, whatever, was in front. And then behind the pride would start, the pride walk would start. And so we were... From when we heard this, we rushed.
No, we didn't rush because they announced us as being in the front. Huh?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
We were announced as being in the front.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, we went where we had to be.
And we make room for the elders to pass. And these guys run.
And they get in front of the elders.
In front of through us. And there are three of them at this point. Just three.
Right.
And one of our comrades was like, I ain't having none of that. I'm not going to have fascists running, like walking, leading the pride.
Right.
So our comrade takes their and starts running away from them.
Right.
They went ballistic.
Yeah, I can tell.
Like, three of them are like punching, pulling, like... Like
they assaulted him.
They assaulted them. And they thought, like, at some point, he's worrying that they had taken off, like, part of their hair. That's how hard they were putting.
In a chokehold.
And get this, I am standing, I'm looking at this right in front of me, and I'm like, what the fuck? It goes so fast.
Yeah, it's amazing really
how fast
this
shit goes. The police is looking at it as well. Yeah. The only people who intervened were the police, but were the security. For the Pride Walk, so the private security
company. Okay.
They were the ones that stopped, like, sort of pulled them off of them. Okay. Like, and this person, this comrade, is somebody who passes as a woman. Okay. They're small. They're petite. They're not, you know. This like, big person. Yeah, this is not the person that you would go like, oh, well, you know, they had to come. This is a tiny little person, right? Uh-huh. And they're attacking them, and I'm looking at, I'm about to, the security jumps on them and pulls them, and they have them in a chokehold, right? Yeah. Get this. They get pulled off. We're walking further, like, you know, are walking with us. We're like, oh, you, and they're very much like, woo, trooper, like, oh, yeah, they go on thing and so on. Like, I think that they only realized how bruised they were after the march was over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, the adrenaline kicked in, and this person is going like, let's go, let's go, mm-hmm. let's go. We leave them on the ground, being held by the police, by the security guys.
Okay, okay.
Within 2 minutes, guess what I see? Guess what I see? I see in the corner that the police is heading them to the front again.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask something? Can you imagine? Look at me.
Yeah.
Can you imagine me holding a little white dude?
And then, coming
and then being escorted to the front of the Pride Walk. Mm-hmm. I would have been escorted straight to jail. Mm-hmm.
In handcuffs.
Mm-hmm.
And beaten.
Beaten a little. But if you're white,
this works out.
This is fine.
Yeah. Okay, so do they end up... suit and a tie.
So what ends up happening? They come back, do they go back into the front of the parade?
Yeah, they're led to the front. And we're walking. And at this point, we're just doing our thing. We're chanting. We walk like...
So big, in front of the elders, they're being escorted?
They're escorted in front of the elders.
Okay.
So at this point, we keep on walking. And I don't think a lot of people from our... I think I was one of the only people who realized that they had been escorted up front. And I was like, I'm not going to make a big deal. We're just going to do it. So we were chanting and we walk. And sort of like the first part of the Pride Walk was not in the sort of like city center.
Mm.
It was along the mast. The cars looked at us going like, what are these great people doing?
Mm-hmm.
And by the time we're about to enter into the city center, the police stop us.
Mm.
And they stand around us and they're not moving. But we're like in our thing and we don't realize that there is, maybe it's traffic, whatever. Like, we're not paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm notified at some point, like, listen, the police is not letting us through. They're letting other people through. Yeah. Like, people before us were being shuttled by the police behind us. They were like being sort of like, so we were being, our block was being...
Pushed to the back.
Back
of the bus racism.
And I was like, I mean, this is Pride. Like, what the fuck? I'm just going to go up front. Nah, the police, they were so violent towards me. And I'm telling this guy, like, listen, all the other people can pass. Why can't we pass? Mm. I'm just going to walk. This is a Pride Walk. This is, you have no reason to hold us here.
Mm-hmm.
We could just walk. Guy was, and then another guy, this other woman comes, and they were both pulling at me. And I was like, go ahead and arrest me then. Like, what the fuck, right? So, doing this with our other comrade as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it was getting really, really... The police was... One of the police dudes, I know he's... and I've seen him around town.
Mm.
On the grinders.
Okay.
And he's black.
Mm.
At some point, he was completely losing it. Like, his white colleagues had to, like, push him off of us.
Mm.
And... at this point, I'm like, okay, I need to let the people that they're letting through know what they're trying to do. So I run to the back, telling people, like, do you realize what the police is trying to do to hold us here? Are you going to stand for that? Blah, blah, and so on. And that's at the point where who were not, like, decided to stop with us.
Mm-hmm.
And just stay put as well. Wait.
Mm-hmm.
And chant with us.
Mm-hmm.
And, but there was a whole group of actual, sort of, there was bisexual
wearing.
By Visibility Day was on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
And they had their home banner, and there's all white people who were like all there for Bi Visibility and so on. We were being ushered by the police, and we were telling them, do you see what they're trying to do with us? They're trying to exclude us. And experiences with the police where you're like, sort of, when they do that, that's the beginning of where you're about to get arrested. Mm-hmm. And everything.
But we've had
that.
Yeah.
I've had that where we all these black people got arrested in one go.
Mm-hmm.
But first it starts off like protecting you, sort of thing.
Mm.
Anyway, so, but these white people, these bisexual people were like, that's not our problem. And they walked on and they passed us by.
Yeah. Right, right.
And, but luckily there were some people also of color who were like, yeah, this is weird. Why they stop these people who are obviously talking about good stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And so a whole bunch of people stayed with us. Mm. And I think that's why the police was like, okay, we are just going to have to keep walking now because they've just gotten... But they first made sure that there was this big, big sort of race car by the KPN that was sponsored by the KPN with music, which, I mean, it's a Pride Walk to drown us out.
Yeah, so people couldn't hear us.
So people couldn't hear us going into the city.
Yeah.
But they sort of miscalculated because then we just got louder.
Yeah. I have never screamed like this in my life. I am loud at demos. Yeah. I am very loud. I've been blessed with a voice.
Dude, are you gonna try to stop us?
Okay, so you're
a voice that has you're going a lot of reach. I mean, I can holler.
Yeah, we hollered. And they were like, and even saw, like, one of the police guys wrote a message to one of us in private. So this is secret. I don't tell no one.
You on a podcast. I wasn't sure if you were aware that you were on a podcast.
But it's in Berlin. No one knows. No one
okay,
knows.
Okay, look. Podcast be on the world. Why?
Do you want to hear this or not?
It's on iTunes.
It's on iTunes.
But let me put it this way. There was a person from the police who was there who wrote an email to one of us in private that actually met this woman in a black hat that was so loud. Like, and she was standing behind me and she was yelling Black Lives Matter.
Yes, of
like,
course.
How can she possibly be saying that in the Netherlands? Because Black Lives Matter just for the American situation with police brutality. And I was like, I was about to write back going like, are you fucking kidding me? Are you seriously? In one year time, the police in Rotterdam have stopped a bus load of black people who were going to demo, not even in Rotterdam, but outside of Rotterdam. They stopped them and arrested all of them.
Yeah. Mm.
And you're going to tell me when we chant Black Lives Matter, it doesn't apply to the Dutch nation? I'm not done yet. In 1 year, so if you're black in Rotterdam, like you cannot demonstrate. That mm-hmm. They can literally take you all out immediately. Yeah. All the police, you cannot demonstrate.
Mm.
The same year, we had a situation where like the police in the Netherlands did messages to one another,
mm-hmm.
and like all chunks of those messages were leaked, where police people ethnic profile racial profiling, you know, they're you know, to do it, that they have to do it, like just in opposition to what the police force is saying, to what international scholars are saying, to what the politics is saying. These police people literally going like, fuck this shit, we're still gonna racially profile them. Yeah. Because they're all a bunch of thugs anyways. Mm-hmm. In 1 year. I mean, just
all how this can stuff has happened.
Yeah, yeah. And one have a situation where a policeman of Moroccan descent in Amsterdam was going to a neighboring precinct, some administrative thing, and he gets locked up for 3 days because they didn't believe him, policeman.
Wow.
Mm. You know, do you follow that case?
No.
It is. 1 year we have not the Supreme Court, but the second sort of level court, Court of Appeals,
mm-hmm.
sort of decide not to prosecute a bunch of policemen who killed a person of color.
Yeah, Mecherikas. It was all over the international news.
Yeah.
Five police officers murdered him in cold blood. They basically suffocated him in cold blood at a festival in Hague.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there was a huge uprising in the Hague.
And for the gay KK or the gay conservatives, this is not a queer issue because you're white.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a queer issue if you're white.
That. No,
none of this is a queer issue.
No, because it doesn't happen to them.
It doesn't happen to us.
Because I think also what you have with the Dutch, white gays, I think that they struggle a lot with that, especially the male ones. I think James Baldwin is really right when he talks about how for the white gay man, they have a sense of loss of intact. Like it's mm-hmm. like, I should have this. Like, I'm entitled. What do you mean I don't get to have all these privileges? Why do you mean?
Mm.
So, that proximity, that's so near to the, you know, it's just that I suck dick, right?
Like, that's exactly, like, so near to the land, but I suck dick. Oh, shit.
So, yeah. There's sort of allegiance. The way that this guy, Leonard, sort of, he's professing allegiance to a system that could maybe, if they just, the fact that he just,
that's
big.
Yeah.
Then it will be all right. And I think that's the appeal, you know. Mm-hmm. And we much more complicated message of solidarity and a this and that, and that takes a lot of, and it requires dismantling a system that is this close to giving him all the privileges that he needs, mm-hmm. that he could have, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, but I'm digressing. We're getting to this point where we're louder than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We're getting into an alley, and this is the city center. This is like the city center at this point, like where all the shopping is done, right? Mm-hmm. So Rotterdam is a worker city, but, and you know how them workers work so hard, do they buy?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was packed, and the car, the boombox thing, couldn't get on the
alley.
One of the celebrations of that night, one of the parties had already set up their stage.
Right. We can't even go in there.
We went all out. We went all out.
So then it takes over the entire situation.
We were so loud. It was ridiculous. Yeah. And we had people come to me whom obviously, like, very much look like racialized people in Netherlands. So they look like with an Arabic background and so on. They come up to me and say, and they're not participating in the Pride Walk. They're just watching this happen, right? And they see us coming, going like, we're here where queer refugees matter and so on. And I had people come up to me and say, hey, thank you so much for saying this. Thank you so much for mentioning refugees. Do I think these people, if they saw me walking out of a gay bar, that they would be like, I'm going to connect to this person? Hell's not. Mm-hmm. But us having a political message of solidarity made them go like, these people get it. And then that's what I think the police wanted to stop. Mm-hmm. And a city like Rotterdam, where it's the most diverse city in the Netherlands, where at a pride walk, where a people of most queer people of color who are chanting things about solidarity, Black Lives Matter, about anti-capitalism, about, you know, these things that we're chanting, that they need a full cordon of police around them. But at this point, there were six of these gay servitives, of Rotterdam. So this fascist political party, they call themselves Livable Rotterdam. Very coded language there. Had joined them as well, so there were six of them now, and they can walk around with a fascist
flag.
Xenophobic
exactly.
message that is, you know, anti-Islam, anti-Black, you know, just they don't need any police protection. How does this? Not only that,
they're beating up people. Exactly.
They can walk they don't need, like, this is the state of the, like, the police doesn't think that these people are a problem. They don't even need protection. They can just walk freely.
Let's revisit what you were talking about before we started the podcast about, like, the illusion that the Dutch have about themselves. Could you articulate that illusion? Like, what is that about? Like, how do the Dutch see themselves? Yeah. I mean, you get to that earlier where you start talking about how, you know, there's this rhetoric around, like, you should be happy that your hair is the best place you could be for a queer person thing.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, what is that about? And how does that, like, sit itself towards, like, white innocence?
I think what the Dutch have convinced themselves, and they have branded, like, marketed really well around the world, is that they are post-racial, they're post-racial, they're post-post. I mean, like, you have people talk to you about how, you know, you don't have sexism anymore in the Netherlands. I've had people tell me, you know, we have reached this, like, meritocracy. Everything is perfect. Like, it's a society and that is liberal, where everyone's free and can, you know, if they just work hard
and be
dignified. The Dutch have convinced themselves is so the case. Given the fact that it was one of the biggest colonizers on Earth, that is strange. They think that they are here now. They think that they have always been so. They've really convinced themselves. And that is a program, that is an educational program that they have sort of, that they do so, like, it's pervasive media. It's in the way, in the school books. It is in a political discourse. Very, very big. The Dutch love, we have a politician who said this year that the Dutch have had a tradition that goes back to thousands of years of Christian liberal and progressive. Thousands of years.
What I'm wondering is how my black ass got a Dutch last name. Because I don't know nobody here.
We have had Netherlands thousands of years of no racism, no sexism. People have always been very happy here.
Yeah.
It is such a strong illusion. I think what Gloria Wecker does really well is show how that sort of...
Yeah. In her book, Innocence.
In the book, White Innocence.
Read it.
Yeah.
It's so important.
She sort of explains really well how that only works if you've convinced, like, the colonies were really far away. Like, the Dutch had figured out a way to sort of have the colonies be something somewhere else. That it was not even, like, there were no markers of colonial sort of dynamics and related imperialism in the Netherlands itself. Mm. Right? So what they were doing in Suriname, what they were doing in the Caribbean, what they were doing in Indonesia, what they were doing in South Africa, they have convinced themselves that it had nothing to do with their sort of native culture, their domestic situation. So they had very strict policy. Like, you couldn't, like, in the British Empire, people move around, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That wasn't possible in the Netherlands. It didn't work like that. That people who were living in the Surinamian people weren't going back in the Netherlands and so on. It was strict division. Everybody stays in enclaves. Mm-hmm. And that's how they were able to build this idea of themselves as always been white. Mm-hmm. Always,
yeah, been. But people did move around. Like, it wasn't the norm, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Like, so it did happen. You have the Day of Eliezer, which we celebrate in resistance of this narrative. Mm. Eliezer was an enslaved African on Dutch soil, because this narrative also says there was no slavery on Dutch soil, because also there was presumably a law against this. Mm. So we commemorate Eliezer, who is the only person we know by name, because at some point in their life, Eliezer was free. And buried. So every year, 2 days before Kitikoti is the celebration of the end of slavery in 1873 is again something that they don't tell you, because in the books it says that slavery in the Netherlands ended in 1863.
The Netherlands and its colonies, right?
Exactly. I say the Netherlands because colonies. And in Indonesia, I believe it's even slavery there, and then when Indonesia was liberated.
Oh, wow, so much.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with Indonesia. But anyway, in certain the colonies, they say that's, like, in the history books, they say slavery ended in 1863. That's the legal date, July 1st, 1863. Actual date that it ended is the July 1st, 1800.
People had to work another 10 years to commit.
So there's a Dutch Juneteenth. Yes. There's a Dutch thing. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. But yeah, so
the Dutch. And this is also with the abolition of Black Pete, you know, the mayor of Amsterdam, who's recently passed away. He was saying, yeah, give the people 10 years to get used to, you know, Black Pete, you know, not being there anymore.
You know Black Pete, right?
No, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Black people were like, oh, you're trying to do it. We've been here before. Yeah. You know, we've been here before.
But also because the protests against Black Pete started in the 20s, no? Mm. In the 90s, right? So the Black people were already saying, like, you need to stop with this fucking racist
blackface. Yeah, yeah. Ever since there has been Black Pete, there have been people saying...
stop it.
Exactly. And they're also trying to act like this first came up in 2011, which is a lie.
It came up 2 weeks ago, so...
Yeah, yeah. Brand new. Yeah, acting like it's brand new, but...
Yeah, the Dutch are very good at historic Indonesia. They are really, really, really great at sort of getting... even these discussions we're having about Black Pete right now, in about 5 or 10 years, they will all act as if it's been that way. Right. As if they have always understood that it was... They really do that really... like it's really well, they do that really well. And the sanctity of their sort of their image... because you have to understand that Dutch are a trader sort of culture. Mm. They've always been at the forefront. Like some of the first publicly traded company... The first public company was Dutch. Mm-hmm. It was a Dutch innovation, you know? This idea... And the kind of capital access it had... that allowed for the slavery trade, slave trade, the colonies. Anyway, the Dutch are really great at trade and economic sort of progress. And that really, part of that is to make sure they have an image of being honorable, of being, you know...
it's branding.
It's branding. And they have been doing so for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. Like, the Dutch still have this idea of golden age. Mm-hmm. You know, they're situated... I was always thought that the golden age was brought about having, you know, sort of being a refuge, sort of like a safe haven for... in the 17th century, right? Mm-hmm. For it having been Amsterdam and so on, having been a refuge for refugees coming from the south, so from Belgium, from France,
running away from the Spanish Inquisition.
And that's the reason why the Dutch, you know, their trade and sort of ingenuity flourished, and they had culture and art was doing really well in the 17th century. That was taught in the school books.
Acting like slavery had nothing to do with it, but
turns out it was because of the slave trade.
Yeah, it was all because of the slave trade and the Portuguese refugees. They were in it. Yeah. In it too.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're gonna have to wrap up soon.
But wrap it up.
Not that quick. You don't get off the hook that easy. Talk about the Dutch. I'm all about you. In the context of all of the things that you talked about, right? You're in this system, you're in this place where in so many ways more than one scene.
Mm.
Right? How do you come home or come into your own space or to your community? How do you commune with yourself? And how do you, could take a moment with it, right? Like, how do you then come to a place where you can still be authentic with yourself and all of what that means without being seen in such profound ways?
Yeah, that's a difficult one.
Yeah, I guess with the We Reclaim It is something brand new that we're building and... Yeah, we are, because of the attack that is on our bodies, we are also demanding, you know, that there is time for healing and time for being in community with each other. Yeah, this is something that we are creating and something that's so important.
Yeah. See, I find it a very difficult... Yeah, like I have a history of addiction and of mental issues, so depression, suicidality, all that. I think that was at when I was sort of doing, when I had internalized all of these mechanisms and all these sort of, you know, even sort of found that the erasure was somehow justified, right? Because we weren't doing enough to show ourselves, right? It was all our own fault and whatnot. And I took it off. Yeah, I took it up on my own body. Disposable. Because it is disposable, right? And so in the last 2 or 3 years, I think I've been clean now for like 2 years, and I've had a lot of therapy. And you know, I'm vegan. I eat healthy every day. I make cook something for myself almost every single day. I work out every day, you know, and I also, for me, it's really important to find people community. But in the sense, like, it's not just about, we talked about it with the last meeting that we had with the Reclaim of Pride. Like, it's not just about being safe with one another, but I also need a community of action. I need a way to get out of this little house and the internet that shows me everything that's happening really, you know, like, wrong. And my own memories and my own sort of discarded bodies. I need to get out there, feel good with people, be able to have these kind of conversations. But from that point on, go and do something. Go and write something and go and, you know, go on the, be harassed by the police. And I need to have hope, but to have hope that is in action, that I'm doing something with it, right? And I think sort of political activism is really, really important to me in that sense, because it brings me also so much healing. Like, just having this chat already like this is really important, because it's a way, we've had this talk since like weeks ago, like almost on a daily basis, going like, do you remember when this, and then did that, oh my god, I can't believe they died. And then we go on Twitter, go like, and then we have people go like, that's so true, that's fucked up. And,
yeah. But like, this is also it, because after this happened at Pride, you have people basically lying when they have the images of
what happened,
video of what happened that corroborates what we're saying. You have the video of what happened, and yet they put on these narratives as though the gay KK were the victims somehow. Like, they beat us up.
Yeah, because if we really are about inclusion, why can't we include them?
Yeah, why can't we include
racists? Why can't we be inclusive towards racists?
Exactly.
So the healing needs to be ongoing.
Yeah, it needs to be, because the thing is, like, for me, like, I have a lot of history to deal with, like a lot of memories to deal with. But as you can clearly hear, like, then you go off next week and do something, and then it happens to you again.
Yeah.
So, I would have setting up now the Reclaim Our Pride sort of a group, hopefully a national sort of collab coordinative network or something. And one of the things I said last meeting is, like, I really need this to be a safe space. I need to have, we need to seriously think about having a program, a social program. Like, when are we going to hang out? When are we going to dance?
Yeah.
When,
yeah.
You know, it's not just about going and, like, going on the, and having the best demo and the most amazing action. It
needs to be also about building
community. Yeah, it needs to be about building community.
Because if we love each other and if we care about each other, of course, fighting for the rights of one another is then an afterthought. It is not the only thing that we do. It's not at the front of what we do. It becomes an act of love as opposed to, like, another thing to stress us out.
Exactly. Because, you know, like, sometimes, and I think we've talked about that as well. Sometimes I come into this sort of activist networks and communities, and it's very much like, are you all the demos? Do you have the best chance?
Yeah. It's a checklist of wokeness.
Yeah. So did you read that article? And did you tweet? Did you share my tweet about the way I said it and all that? You know, sometimes I sit there and I'm listening to that and I see how it interacts. And also the sort of, like, if you don't have the best analysis of something, I mean, you obviously are either have internalized way too much shit, or you're, like, probably possibly infiltrated or something. You know, there's, like, this sense of, like,
urgency. Yeah, social justice spaces are not always
safe. I'm not always safe. And I've sort of, I look at it and I remember sitting in sort of, like, when I was working as a lawyer, I remember people treating each other this way in the boardroom. I remember it being like, did you stay up all night doing this, finishing this or that? I remember all this sort of the weight and also the ape of it. And I go, like, but wait a minute. When I look back on the kind of communities I've grown up with, like the Burundian women who got shit did, they did most of it while they were cooking and planning meals. And then, like, they were, like, so nurturing to one another. I mean, you know, there's some spite and shit. And, like,
stuff happens.
There's some mess. But, like, but so much of it was so, like, the way I've seen people organize in Burundi, so much of it happens in a social, like, almost as if the activist part of things, the, you know, it's like an afterthought.
Exactly. It's which an act it isn't. Of love. It's an act of love.
And I go, like, how I need, and we talked about, like, how do we decolonize this activist space? I go, like, well, is this the only way to organize?
First, we start by hooking up our queer collective in Rotterdam, and we model it. And that's what's going to go down. And all I, just, where are the papers?
Yes.
I don't speak a Dutch.
I think we need to do that.
Get together. I'm just saying. I mean, like, you know, play your part. It was so wonderful talking to y'all. I really, really, really appreciate it.
I really appreciate you took all this time to listen to us because we rant.
It's all right. It was all valuable.
You should see me on Twitter.
It was so valuable. I just, you know, piss me off. I just really, really also want to thank you for not speaking Dutch to me. Okay. All right. Well, once again, I really appreciate the work that y'all are doing here. And I know that something amazing is going to come out of it.
We hope so.
Me too.
Amandla.
I too.